Mafia, welcome to this special edition Father's Day show of the Overreaction Podcast, Overreaction Sports Network with Jerry Ostrowski and John Fina. Thanks for coming on Father's Day. If you've got a little bit of barbecued rib heartburn, or you're a little beef overed from the barbecue and you're just sitting down, you need to relax, decompress a little bit, I hope you join us. Jump on over to YouTube, hit the subscribe button, share it with a friend, share it with family, share it with an enemy. Thanks for coming on Father's Day. Jerry and I are both fathers. We're happy to have you here. We're going to talk a little Bills football. We're going to share some stories about what it means to be a dad and what our dads meant to us. But thanks again for joining on this special Father's Day edition. I really appreciate all of you in the Bills Mafia checking Joe and Jerry and John out a couple, three, four times a week and sharing this great show with all of your friends. So, Jerry, happy Father's Day to you.
Hey, happy Father's Day to you, John. I want to say something before we go in, and we're going to talk a little bit about our dads, you know, and what it means to be a dad. Before we get into the Bills talk, as they wrapped up mini camp this week, got some areas we want to touch on. But I also want to make this point. There's a lot of kids out there that have moms and grandmoms and aunts and things like that. There's a lot of people that didn't have a dad, and those strong women in their lives stepped in to be the dad and the mom. So as crazy as it is, you know, it's Father's Day and all that, acknowledgement that there's some people out there that, you know what, some others stepped up and played those roles as well. And whether you're an uncle, a friend, a family friend, a coach, this is a day to recognize you as well.
And you know what, Jerry, just like in those Friday afternoon pizza meetings, you stole my thunder, because the next words out of my mouth were going to be to all the ladies, the moms in the chat. Right. Tell us a little bit about what you've done with your great sons and daughters. Have you stood in when dad wasn't around? And appreciate you acknowledging that, Jerry. You know, sometimes you got to cobble it together. And I know that Bill's Mafia cobbles it together better than just about anybody out there. So Yep. Thanks. Jerry, tell us a little bit about, I want to hear a little bit about your dad, maybe one of the pearls that he left you. And then tell me a little bit about, you know, your experience being a dad.
There's probably a lot of things I can't say about the stuff that my father taught me over the years. My dad was an interesting dude, man. He was an orphan by the time he was six. So he rolled into this fatherhood thing without a lot of positive examples himself. He was a guy that was raised by his grandparents. And so in retrospect, he kind of raised himself. So I was blessed. My father was always there for me. My father was my coach in Little League, in basketball, those types of things. You know, he was the best man at my wedding. I'm an only child. So my dad was my best friend. And, you know, I remember a lot of things, a lot of time we spent, you know, practicing sports, practicing ball and all that type of stuff. But I would say, you know, we spent a lot of time hunting and fishing, and we, you know, just tons and tons of together time in those scenarios. But the one thing that my father instilled in me more than anything is a toughness. And if you know me, I preach toughness. Toughness is something you have to have to be a successful person in this world, especially nowadays with the world the way it is. And, you know, my dad got up every day. He got up at 5 o'clock every day. He put his clothes on. He went to work, and he did that until the day he retired. And that toughness and that work ethic, it stuck with me. And, you know, the example he set with how he was a huge influence on my life. And that's the type of things that I try to instill in my sons. And also my daughter. I mean, we have a unique family. We have two biological kids, our two oldest kids, my son Jackson, who's a coach at Eastern Illinois, and my son Owen, who's a defensive end at Tulsa. Then we have adopted twins, a boy and a girl. So we do have an interesting family. We have stepped in for others that couldn't do that job. But it was it's that toughness and that work ethic that you just try to show them every day. And, you know, I'm really blessed that he was that type of guy.
Oh yeah, man. That's great. Hello to Tracy and 716 Sports Blizzard, Richard and Tom and everybody in the comments, Jerry. That's great. I mean, you know, I think you and I have a little bit of parallel parenting that we lived through, right? I was the fifth boy, you were an only child, but Chuck Fina was all about discipline.
hard work, commitment, and, you know, being a kind of like a blue collar immigrant family, even though my dad, you know, became a doctor, he bought a fixer upper, had five boys. So by the time I was 8 years old, you know, I knew how to run block, right? I probably mixed over 500 wheelbarrows full of concrete in my life. And, you know, it was a never say die attitude. And just, you know, but not in a harsh kind of way. Just, you know, the almost like the, you know, the tortoise. Just keep applying yourself. Just keep showing up. Just keeping your work ethic up, and your time is going to come. And I think, you know, from my perspective, when I started having kids, I think, tell me if this happened to you too. Like, you're balancing how you were raised,
right,
with the way you want to raise your kids. And sometimes those things conflict. And then you add in, you know, your wife, who was raised in a certain way and has ideas about raising kids her way. Right. Right. And you're negotiating all these personal things and then partnership things on raising kids. And I think the one thing that I kind of, I try to forgive myself for the poor parenting decisions I've made over the years, because you can't get it right. Right.
Right. It's hard. I mean, it's something that, and, you know, there's that old poem that goes, you know, tough times create strong men create easy times create weak men create tough times, you know, and it's like, how do you balance all that, especially when you're in a situation where, you know, you very well could make things real easy on your kids. And it's just a fine line to make sure that you still, you know, preach that work ethic, preach that toughness, and make sure that they understand and appreciate where they come from.
Yeah. Well, it is truly, I think, the hardest job I've ever had.
Yes.
And you've got multiples, right? You've got four, I've got four. Right. And I think the curious thing, you know, the way I was raised, one of six, is, you know, our parents had one rule of parenting and we all adhered to it. And now we're sort of, I guess, better educated, more knowledgeable, and you have to kind of parent the kids differently. I'm sure you're finding, like, what works with Owen doesn't work with Jackson, doesn't work with your daughter. And you're like, you're trying to elicit the best in them, but you have to use a different technique. And, you know, by the end of the day, you're like, oh my God, I'm too tired. Can I just do the same damn thing with Owen?
You'll be sitting there at the end of the day exhausted, questioning whether you are a good parent or not, just because,
right,
you know, there's always that one that just is a little bit tougher than the rest. But hey, again, happy Father's Day to all those out there, all the dads and all the people stepping in the role of a father for those that don't have their dad around. We commend you for it. We thank you for it. And we just wanted to touch a little bit on Father's Day and what it means to us and everything. But as you know, this is a Buffalo Bills vidcast, a Buffalo Bills podcast tomorrow morning, and we're going to talk about the Bills. And John, you wanted to touch on some things. I know we're going to talk a little bit about the offensive line, some theory, some stuff from some press conferences, Dawson Knox, Connor McGovern, and just kind of touch on a few things before we get out of here at the bottom of the hour.
Well, you know, I caught that interview with Connor McGovern and Dawson Knox, and I think probably everybody saw it or heard it. I got to be honest with you, it gave me a great sense of confidence, right? I think what happens during the dead period, Jerry, when all this movement is happening, everybody sort of starts to constrict a little bit, right? You're waiting, like, how much air can go into the balloon before it pops. And right, with all the changes that are going on our beloved Bills roster, you can't but help, you know, having doubt creeps, and you're like, well, wait a minute, we got a new center. That means we have to have a new left guard. And you start to think, oh my God. And then just that presser starting off with the levity with Dawson Knox. I don't think he's particularly funny. I mean, he's not Nate Bargatze funny, who I saw, who Joe was seeing tonight. But there was an effort there to keep it loose, to keep it real. And I really, truly feel like the content that came after that, and I want to hear your opinion, delivered a layer of confidence after losing really one personality in Mitch Morse. but it causes a ripple effect through the offensive line.
Right.
How do you recover from that? And as I sketch it out, I feel pretty good. I don't have the deepest concerns at this position.
Right. One thing about McGovern is, and just kind of a little bit of history and background with him, he was the number two rated center in the country coming out of high school. He went to Penn State. He started out at center. Then they moved him to guard, moved him back to center. So it's not like center is foreign to him. If you watch the press conference, Connor McGovern actually said that he's back at his natural spot. He is happy to be back snapping the ball. So we have that. There's a lot of people, Dawson Knox, one of them, talking about his communication skills. While being different from Mitch, his communication is extremely good. It's quick. Connor stated that he helped Mitch last year with some of the communication on the line calls. So while McGovern has not played a ton of snaps at center in the NFL, I actually went back a few weeks ago and dug into the 2022 season. And there's a half of football in the preseason that McGovern played center. And then he played some center for cleanup duties when people got hurt as the year went on. And, you know, it's just a handful of snaps. If you go to All 22, you can look up past years and watch that stuff. McGovern was very capable. He's a long center. He reminds me more of like a Kent Hull than a shorter, squattier, physical type center. He's going to move real well. He's got athleticism. He's a leverage blocker guy, not necessarily a put your face in there and physically move people with leverage and strength. But very capable, and as you would expect, good in pass pro, had a few misses with some lean stuff, but overall, I mean, you know, very commendable. So as he gets more comfortable being back in that spot again, I think you're going to see his play go exponentially up as the season goes on.
Right. Those are great points. And don't you feel like his style of play actually works for this offense? Right?
Yes.
More of a leverage player.
Right. And I think it does, John. Right. And it does. But the question out there right now in Buffalo and on the offensive side of the ball is, if you listen to a lot of these press conferences, and even though Brady himself said that, Joe Brady said that this is Josh Allen's offense and that he meets with Josh Allen regularly as far as what he wants to put in and not put in, there also has been a ton of quotations out there, a ton of quotes by players saying, we are going to run the ball more this year. And so you're taking, and goes back to the original question, you're removing your starting left guard and moving him to center. So now you've got two new pieces in that offensive line with a group that I feel the right side of the line is much more of a physical run blocking side with Spencer Brown and Osiris Torrance. And then the left side of the line with Deion Dawkins, while he can hook up and run plays, he's more athletic and a guy that can trap and do those things. And then you put David Edwards in the spot for McGovern, and then McGovern, we all know. How does this group look run blocking? I think they're fine. I think this is a very good group. I think they're getting better and better. I think the question mark right now would be, John, and really, is this a better offensive line with David Edwards starting at left guard and McGovern starting at center? Or does Van Pran Granger come on and show that the better five up front is, you know, Van Pran Granger at center and McGovern back at left guard? So,
well, I'll tell you where I thought you were going with that was this combination compared to last year, because there are only two pieces that flipped, right? Mitch Morris. And I would have said to that, it's a wash. I don't love the idea of Cedric coming in at center over McGovern and moving him to guard just yet. I would have to say, let's see how he picks up the offense, sorts it out. And as you know, just as well as I do, you know, what made offensive lines great when we played is not that the center knew every call and made it quickly enough and made it on time. It's that the center made the call that only affirmed what the other four guys knew already, because we studied film, we paid attention. I wasn't standing out there at the island at left tackle waiting for you when you played center to make the call. I was just waiting for you to confirm it, because I'd look at the defense too. And I think, you know, if you can get tight ends into that mindset, and you talk about 12 personnel and you talk about 13 personnel, I think the only way that works is if they are dug in like that. And a call from the center only affirms what you already know because you're staring at the defense.
Right. I mean, I shouldn't have to make an ace call or a Ripper Liz call or whatever the different things we used to call up front, and everybody be sitting there waiting to hear what I say because they didn't know what's going on. You know what's going on before that call is made. And the way things work is that when the center makes a call, all calls work distally. They work from the inside out. So as John said, while he already knows, he's waiting to hear that center call because the center's going to make a call that is a call between him and the guard, right? So him and if we're running to the left, it's him and the left guard. And he knows by that call automatically, okay, I got a money. I'm on my own. I'm man to man. Or, okay, I've got a tight end with me. Since they're doing that, it was one of two things. So now we're going to run a trade block. I'm going to run a block with the tight end. So as John said, it's something to reaffirm what should already be known, and everything runs distally from inside out. But I don't know. I mean, really, offensive line wise and battles at camp, I just think that that's kind of really the only scenario I could see. Now, maybe Lyle Collins comes in and they play him in some reps at guard. They think that maybe as he's gotten older in his career, they want to bump him inside a little bit and then have him as the swingman tackle. That could be a possibility. But honestly, I think that by them forcing Edwards on the field last year and a lot of the running plays with him playing that kind of big H, that extra offensive line position, they've got a lot of faith in what he does up front. And I think you'll see that group that right now is running through or just ran through minicamp, and minicamp being over now, that'll probably be the group you see day one, first game of the season, unless you have injury.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I don't know about the Lael Collins thing. I mean, Alec Anderson, I think, is at the point now where he has to make his way onto the active roster, right?
Right.
He's younger. He's a big kid. He plays four or five positions. And, Lael Collins, I think it's nice to have a guy around like that if he has the right, kind of attitude, if he can swing at both tackles. Because really, I mean, you mentioned him playing inside, but currently I see him as the solution at the swing tackle more than Vandermark. What's your opinion? Right.
No, I think you're right. I think that one thing that Cromer has seemed to do every year as he's been the offensive line coach is he's gone out and signed a vet guy, right? Mm-hmm. He's gone out and signed a vet guy to bring in as kind of an insurance dude in case something happens. They did that with Collins this year. They're always going to have that experienced guy in case they need him, especially if you're trying to get out of a game. Because a lot of times, you don't want to put the young kid in without any practice time or as much practice time. And your reps are limited if you're not a starter during the prep week. So throw a vet in there to get you out of a game, and then you bring in maybe one of those other guys next week. So, no, I think that I think you're 100% correct. I mean, I guess as much as I'm going to be looking at McGovern in the preseason, I think my eyes are going to be looking at Edwards more than anybody because I want to see what he can do.
Totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. Now, I did hear a blurb or read a blurb about Tommy Doyle not getting picked up, and there's talk about the Bills bringing him back. So I didn't get a chance to dig into that story. I don't know if it's anywhere at this point, but as it stands right now, I think Tommy Doyle is not re-signed on the roster.
Well, let me ask you this, John, and with this constant notion or this constant talk of the Bills are going to run the football more, which I think you did see with Joe Brady when he took over. One thing that's interesting I thought was pretty cool blurb, and if you have a chance to go to YouTube and pull up the Buffalo Bills page.
Right after you pull up the Overreaction Sports Network and subscribe and share.
Exactly. But if you get to go back and watch that interview, it's a combo interview. Knox and McGovern are up there together. And, one of the things they talked about was it was two things, and I'm going to get into my I'm going to make a point, and I'm going to get into my set my actual question to you, John. But the point they made was partway through the year, and it was actually while Dorsey was still there, when they started installing run plays, they brought the running backs into the room with the offensive linemen.
Right.
And the offensive linemen and the and Cromer actually explained to the running backs what they were trying to do in these looks and where the potential holes would be. Then the back said, okay, well, this is what I'm looking at, and see how you tried to reach the linebacker. Well, when you go to the outside shoulder here, I see color of the opposing jersey, so I cut away from it. If you want me to push that hole, then go down the middle and cover that dude up. So I'm going to follow you because you're wearing my jersey, right? So it was really good. And my oldest boy who coaches Eastern Illinois, they actually do that from time to time where they'll bring the running backs into the O-line room and the O-line coaches will coach the running backs and vice versa so that they both see what each other's looking at theory-wise and what they're thinking. But Dawson talked about 12 personnel. And I know last year that was the huge topic in the offseason was now we got a second tight end. Dalton Kincaid's coming in. We got a second tight end. We can play a ton of 12 personnel. Well, Knox alluded to the point where it's going to probably be once again a focal point of this offense because the tight ends run routes so well, and Knox is healthy. You know, last year he was beat up, had the wrist injury and stuff. With both of them healthy, they're a definite dual passing threat, okay? And as we talk about wide receiver by committee, you got to throw the tight ends in there. But then also, if you want to bring in nickel corner in, now we're going to punish you with the run blocking and running the football. Do you feel this ace look is what they call it? It's ace formation. Some people call it 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends. Do you think this is the best set for this Bills offense?
No, I've never loved it. I think if history has taught us anything, unless they are able to do a little bit more of what you were talking about and what I've, you know, I coached JV football and I, you know, a couple of years ago, and I can't believe this still, you know, is going on in the pros, right? This should have happened so long ago because there are no new plays. Is I turned the JV offensive line around and said, I want you to look at the backfield. I want you to see the play. I want you to know why we're running it. What's the philosophy? This is what the running back is going to see. This is why, you know, so the whole feel in addition to just doing your assignment is just massive. But to address your question about ace or 12 personnel, until the tight ends become like running backs and understand the philosophy, the flow, the direction of the play, that they and that they're able to identify the defense from the center to their side, I just think we've seen too many assignment errors. We've seen too many physical mismatches. I don't love it, Jerry, unless you get them both on the line of scrimmage and you're running wide zone, play action, a la Indianapolis and Peyton Manning with Edger and James. I just, when you start throwing too much into it, it just gives me a little bit of agita.
I think that 12 actually fits them well. I don't think that either of them are – the problem is I don't think either of them are strong run blockers. Nope. I think they're adequate. I don't think there's a hammer. Like, everybody wants to talk about New England when you had Gronk and the rest
Kittle,
of the
Kittle, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, or Kittle and that whole – you know, so you had all these different guys. Gronk was a hammer. I mean, Gronk would block you. He would choke dudes out on the line of scrimmage. He could run block well as running routes and catching the ball. I think it was a little bit different there. This, in this case, I think both of these guys are much more of they're route runners, they're pass catchers. But I do think they're getting better, and I do think that they have the ability to run the football out of ace, especially with Knox talking about Kincaid, as polished as he was as a rookie, he's even more further along now. So you have to understand you got personnel that's been better because of experience. And you got an offensive line that's shown they can run the ball. I don't know. I think it has a chance to be a pretty successful formation.
Jerry, I'll grant you all of that, but my comeback to that is there are plenty of plays you can run with one tight end too.
There are, but you know, yeah. But the like they say though, this league and talking about why are we paying wide receivers all this money now and we're not paying running backs? I mean, the league is a three wide out league now. I mean, it's 90 some percent of the time teams are in three wides. They're in pro set, right? With a single back. And if you can mix some things up and do some things, especially with teams kind of trying to build to play against those types of offenses, you know, it's if you have it, it's an advantage. But my biggest issue is going to be, and this is probably going to be the thing that Bills Mafia talks about the most, if we are talking about running the football, that means number 17's not throwing the football. Are you willing to take the ball out of his hands more than you ever have since he's been in Buffalo to establish a run? That, at the end of the day, is going to be the million-dollar question.
Well, I would say yes to that, frankly. I do love, and I've always said, Josh really gets rolling if he can scramble early in the game. So I think a designed run or a scramble is always healthy for Josh to get the testosterone pumping early on in the game. But I just think that the variety and quality of the running backs that we have now between, you know, James Cook and the returners and some of the new guys on the roster, I think there are some really strong options. We're going to see 12 personnel, but I hope that we use it in a very, and I don't want this to come across wrong for anybody out there, but a simple approach, right? We don't have to outsmart everybody all the time with some wicked, crazy run game philosophy, moving guys in that don't belong inside the box and trying to angle block down when guys aren't ready to count, right? 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Who's my guy? So if they're gonna keep it simple, stupid, I think we got a good chance at running a little more 12 personnel effectively in the run game.
And John DeFazio makes my point for me. And I was going to talk about this after you made your point, but says, fellas, I think formations become an advantage when tempo and audibles are mixed in. Defense not having time to adjust, plus Josh has time to process and pivot. Thoughts? I think where 12 personnel becomes a very, very good situation for the Bills is this. Dalton Kincaid, to me, is the key to the 12 personnel. It's not Dawson Knox. If you want to take Knox out of the equation and put Quentin Morris in, put Quentin Morris in. I don't care. The key to 12 for the Bills is Kincaid, because to me, if you go to 12, you run up-tempo, no huddle out of 12, and then you can run your pro sets, your three wide sets with Kincaid in the slot. Now you have multiple sets you can get to with 12 personnel. So it's hard to really, you know, defend that. How can you rush somebody in the game? If the Bills are in 12 and they hop to Kincaid in the slot a bunch, do you bring a nickel corner in, which then makes you susceptible for big runs and things like that? So I think if they use it in that scenario with up-tempo and different things where you're flexing Kincaid back and forth, that becomes the advantage. But just to have both guys line up with their hands on the ground, I agree with John 100%. Way too many missed assignments last year. Way too many guys getting across their face and blowing up C-gap and making tackles for loss. Unless you can get rid of that, there is no advantage in putting both of those guys on the end of the line of scrimmage.
Right. And Jerry, I mean, you know as well as I do, like, how up-tempo do you have to be to prevent the defense from going from nickel back to regular, right? Or dime back to nickel. So I agree. It everything's functional, right? Nothing new under the sun. It's how well do I execute it? How well do my guys understand who and can get into place quickly enough, get set, motion? Because that's what we're talking about, right? We're talking about when we say flex, you know, we have to be able to do it from line up static, motion out, line up static, motion across the formation, run a variety of run plays, attack with two tight ends. I think offensively we're in better shape than we are defensively. So if they look at it from the principle of let's be creative in our philosophy, let's have some really cool red zone packages that are directed at punishing the defenses we play and not being the same thing every time you get inside the 25, then we have a really good chance of boat racing, right?
Yep, exactly. Any other points? Anything you want to get into, John, as we get to the end of the at the bottom of the hour, get out of here for tonight?
No, man. I mean, it's June the 16th, right? It's Jim Fina's birthday. Happy birthday to my brother Jimmy. Also, Father's Day. Look, it's just like this gets even rougher when it gets to this point before training camp, because you had a little taste of mini camp, few little injuries here and there, right? Khalil Shakir and Baylen Spector and Rasul Douglas is this and that, and who's out with family. And you're like, you know, now it's just like you just got to wait and sit, because when it hits the ground running in July, then it's, you know, all bets are on, not all bets are off. All bets are on.
This is when the physical countdown clock would begin. Mini camp was over, and every day that you got back in bed and put your head on the pillow, you went, damn, that's one more day closer to the training camp.
Oh, man.
You want me to take us out, or you want to take us out, John?
No, I'll let you take us out. But, hey, everybody out there, if you enjoyed the show, if you hated the show, share it with somebody you love or somebody you hate. Get on over to YouTube, subscribe, send it out. Yep. Jerry, happy Father's Day to you. Happy Father's Day and happy quasi Father's Day to everybody in the chat. We love you guys. We love our Bills. Jerry, take us out, bud.
As always, you're watching us on the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network. We'll be back Tuesday with On the Beat, then Thursday on the Big O Show, and we'll come back at you on Sunday. Three shows a week until we get closer to the season, and we'll drop our full lineup on you once we get closer to training camp. I'm the Big O, Jerry Ostrowski. He is John Fina. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills, Jerry O.